Tonight, in place of your regularly scheduled podcast, please enjoy this very special advertisement courtesy of the Barack Obama for President campaign.
With each passing month, our country's faced increasingly difficult times. But everywhere I go,
I'm
moved.
Yeah, you should be.
Ken, I don't care how much money he paid us, we cannot devote 30 minutes to the Barack Obama advertisement.
If we were going to do a half hour of Barack Obama without stopping, we might as well call ourselves MSNBC.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And I guess we're going to have to give all that money back. What I really can't believe is that they were willing to spend all that amount of money just to reach out to our listener.
You know something what's so interesting? We're talking about the fact that a Democratic campaign has too much money.
I know. How can that sentence make any sense? A Democratic campaign, by its very nature, never has very much money. And if they had money, they'd be Republicans.
Exactly. And Republicans are talking about the Democrats buying the election. But it shows how much money he has when you can spend $1 million per network, correct?
Yes. Yes. Several networks.
NBC,
several million dollars. Look, there are those who would say that the entire campaign has been a paid infomercial in the media for Barack Obama. People who would say, you know, why bother to buy 30 minutes when the news programs are doing his job for him? Ken, are they correct?
Well, except there is still question that I think one of the reasons why John McCain is still campaigning in Pennsylvania, thinks he has a shot in Iowa and New Hampshire, is perhaps that he is seeing some, I mean, I don't know if it's by this or not, but some softening of the Obama campaign, of the Obama message.
Why can no one else find it? There are polls into these states absolutely on a daily basis. They are looking for likely voters. They are trying to damp down the number of first-time voters so as to build a more conventional definition of likely voter. And they're just not finding any upsurge for John McCain here.
But I suspect that, and we've said this before, that the undecided vote is the likelihood of a McCain vote. And he's going to have to reach out these undecided voters. Now, I think the way to go is really to focus on the red states. He's in the process of losing. I mean, every poll I've seen in Ohio, he's down 6-7 points.
And again, and that's Ohio, which everyone considers a toss-up, including you and me.
Right, and
he's down twice that much in Pennsylvania,
right.
And he's in there campaigning almost as much as he is in Ohio.
I don't know if it's to save House seats. That's possibility, too.
Oh, but why would John McCain care about a couple of House seats? He's got to worry about what his strategy is to take this election back from Barack Obama. And it seems to me that their strategy all along has been to knock Obama below 50.
Right.
Use the negative ads to bring him below 50 and then assume that his own number would settle somewhere in the low 40s and then he gets a big break in his favor among the undecided,
but,
just as you say.
But the problem is if Obama goes below 50, McCain is still 72.
Do the math.
It was my understanding.
All right. My question is, did this infomercial actually help Barack Obama to be worth several million dollars, and not to mention the first third of this podcast?
Well, every response I've gotten from friends and non-friends, they said that it was very good. It was moving. It was effective. But I think these were Obama people.
It was well-produced. It was well-produced.
Yeah.
And, you know, it looked a little bit like those things you see at the conventions themselves, and then some of the footage was from the convention. So it was all this kind of elegiac, hagiographic, almost rhapsodic ways of describing the candidate. And, you know, really there was not that much substance except to say over and over, I empathize, I feel your pain, I see you, the ordinary people of America struggling with these difficult times.
As rolling of the eyes some of his rhetoric can be, when you compare it to the last 8 years of rhetoric, I think it's something that people want to hear. I think the rhetoric we've heard the past 8 years is sort of like listening to us on the podcast. It makes no sense, and you don't know where it's going.
But you can do it again next week.
That's right.
Well, here's a
and
question.
And that's it for this week.
Here's a question. If John McCain sees this going on, this kind of, you know, maybe gauzy, as he called it, soft stuff, squishy stuff, coming from the Democratic candidate, how much luck is he having with his hammer him down with the negatives strategy? Now we've gone from, you know, one kind of robocall about Bill Ayers to a controversy about whether or not the LA Times is hiding a videotape of Bill Ayers at the same dinner party with or some kind of an honors awards dinner where Bill Ayers was in attendance and so was Barack Obama.
And Leon Trotsky.
If there was a tape with me and Sarah Palin and some neo-Nazi or one of those, do you think that tape wouldn't be made public? Of course, Americans need to know, particularly about Ayers and also about the PLO. So hopefully there'll be enough pressure on the LA Times that it'll come out. But it's really unfortunate that we have to go through this.
Was somebody making popcorn in the back?
In the background, I think that talk show host was typing furiously, who is this guy and why am I interviewing him? I do think that tone, which really has taken over both his campaign, McCain's, and Sarah Palin's, is this kind of sarcastic,
bitter,
martyred, boy, this isn't fair.
Who does it remind you of?
Well, Richard Nixon a little
bit. Or Bob
Dole. Just a little bit. Or Bob Dole toward the end. Where's the outrage?
Exactly.
Wasn't that the theme of
his
last week?
Right, right.
We've heard this back over the years from Democrats as well when they're sort of in the throes. Mike Dukakis in the final week of his campaign. How am I losing to this guy?
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
That wasn't Mike Dukakis. That was John Lovitz.
That was who made a much better candidate. We've heard this in the end, and it's transmitting. It conveys a certain kind of message. And it's not the hopeful message that one wants to hear from one's presidential candidate in the final days. So, what are the real toss-up states at this point, Ken? You, as the master of the NPR map, were in charge when the state of Nevada was officially leaned to Barack Obama.
That's right. That's right.
What did that mean to you personally?
It meant that even the undecided states, which are late deciders, obviously, you think that if there's going to be a McCain comeback, this is the kind of state he'd have to win back. But Nevada seems to be gone.
How about some of these other states that are popping up? Politico's website has, I believe, Montana as a toss-up state now, North Dakota as a toss-up state. You hear people talking about a closing gap in Arizona.
Yeah. And you know about me. I have...
you have a sense of humor.
Yes,
of
I
course.
Do. Thank you.
Yes,
all right.
Well,
yes.
We wanted to hit that one for sure.
Because it's been over a week.
I do believe that these are states that no one, even a month ago, could imagine. Georgia, Arizona, Montana, North Dakota, being competitive.
Everyone, I think, is a McCain state.
In the end, they all will be. All we're saying is that there seems to be a settling of the vote in a lot of states that we normally think of as red states, that while McCain will still win, he's not going to be dominating that vote the way you would expect a Republican to do.
Now, if we believe that Barack Obama wins on Tuesday, and I am among those people, and if
is that right, Ken? Can I put you down for that?
Uh-huh,
put you down.
Yep,
right.
yep.
Ken,
and you know, and you think that this is going to be a really dark period for the Republican Party?
I don't think so. I don't think it'll be a dark period.
That's exactly the point.
Powerless, but not dark.
Well, certainly they'll be shut out of the House, Senate, and the White House. But when you think of after Barry Goldwater won six states in 1964, Lyndon Johnson, massive sweep, Democrats in the House and Senate. 2 years later, the whole Great Society fell apart. Republicans won 47 seats in the House.
In 1966. Yeah. And in 1968, the combined vote total of Richard Nixon and George Wallace was almost 60%. It was 57%. It was approaching what LBJ had won in 64. So what a reversal.
But
in just the minimum amount of time.
Every time we think this is a sea change in politics, look, 1972, Richard Nixon wins 49 states. 2 years later, it's Watergate and a big Democrat.
A year later, we had the hearings in the Senate, and year later, he had resigned, and then this tsunami in the House, as you just mentioned.
Right.
All right, let me just throw out, though, the counterexample.
Counterexample in history,
1932. FDR wins the presidency in a landslide,
huge
majorities in the House and Senate, and 2 years later,
continued increasing
their margins in the House and Senate. And in 1936, another landslide over Al.
Although
Clinton.
In 38, not that I mean,
okay, but then right, you know, some justice, right. some adjustment came in 38. You know, I think the Democrats could stand that if you could tell them that they were going to have a couple of elections like they had in the 1930s.
Okay.
Tight Senate races?
Wait, I want us on the record because it's the last, it's the last podcast before November 4th. Did I spit on you?
No.
Okay. It's the last podcast before.
Did you want to?
Yes. Last podcast before November 4th. I want to know right now. Let's call them. Utah.
Pass.
Okay. Senate races. Okay. Senate races.
No. First of all, do you think that Obama will be able to carry the full base of John Kerry's vote from 2004, all the electoral votes that John Kerry got?
I do. I know.
So Pennsylvania stays with the Democrats.
New Hampshire stays with the Democrats. And
those are the only ones under real pressure. I don't think Wisconsin or Minnesota pops loose.
No.
And we're not really looking at any other question marks at this point. Maybe the state of Washington, nobody really thinks that's
going
for McCain.
All.
Right. So that's 252. So how does he get to 270? I give him Virginia at this point. Do you?
I do.
But not necessarily North Carolina and necessarily Florida.
I don't.
Okay, if I really had to bet, I'd say Florida stays with the Republicans.
Indiana, I can't see.
No, that's red.
Right.
That's McCain. Missouri, in the end.
Missouri, too.
To me, I don't see Missouri going for McCain, but I think it will be extremely close.
Think of Claire McCaskill and Jim Talent 2 years ago.
I understand that, and that would be a reason to color it blue. Claire McCaskill is not African-American, and I think Missouri still has to prove that they're willing to vote statewide for an African-American. I would give Colorado, New Mexico, and probably Nevada as well to Obama. So that right there would be enough to put him over 270, even without Virginia, even without Missouri, even without Ohio.
Senate races?
Senate races, all right, let's do the easy ones.
The news of the week.
The news of the week.
Ted Stevens.
Ted Stevens becomes, in my opinion, one of the easy ones. I mean, there's a scenario that Alaskans rise up and say, we will not allow a jury in the District of Columbia to tell us who our senator ought to be.
And,
but, you know, I don't think so.
And Republicans are saying, look, okay, Ted Stevens may have disappointed all of us. Let him get reelected. Let him resign. And then let's have a new election without a tainted candidate. I think a lot of Republicans would love that scenario.
That's right. That's what you say. What you say is you're not voting for Ted Stevens. Right. You're voting for the chance to vote again for a different Republican.
Right.
And since he can't get off the ballot and replace himself, that's what they have to do.
Right.
I don't think that's good enough this year because Stevens was already locked in a too-close-to-call race with Mark Begich, the mayor of Anchorage, who's a strong candidate.
Right. And, he's a good candidate.
And at this point, now that Stevens is humiliated and disgraced, it seems very hard to imagine people going into the booth. Hardcore Republicans, sure, 40, maybe 45% of the people. But I can't imagine 50% of the people being willing to go into the booth and say, I'm not really voting for Ted Stevens.
I think that's true. Maybe we thought that Ted Stevens would be exonerated, although the evidence in the trial certainly didn't indicate that. But there was still some sign that despite all his problems, Ted Stevens was going to win another term that he's been there since 68, which is, you know, the longest Republican in history. But now McCain wants him to resign now.
Palin. Yeah. His own governors asked him to resign.
You know what's fascinating to me?
That Mitch McConnell, the head of the Republicans in the House.
Well, look,
these guys go back. Some of these people go back 30 years, and they're calling on him to resign.
You can't criticize the Democratic Party for being soft on corruption and then allow a convicted felon saying this.
Well, that's true, but they could have said, look, we all know Ted will resign if he just wins this election.
Yeah.
So please just vote for Ted as the placeholder, as the standard bearer for the
party.
And
then give our party a chance.
And then give our party a chance to nominate, hey, Sarah Palin.
Perhaps.
Down the road. She could come to Washington as a senator.
Speaking of
you don't even want to pause for a second to imagine Sarah Palin in the Senate?
Well, it might hurt her 2012 presidential candidacy, which starts
We wouldn't want to do that.
Now,
let's talk about some of the really tough calls. How about Virginia? Mark Warner? Up, down? All right, that's
a
joke.
What do you mean, over, under 30?
Senator Mark Warner.
That's
all right, moving on to the great state of New Mexico. Do we see Senator Tom Udall?
Not even close. A clear pickup like Virginia, New Mexico. Pete Domenici has had that since 72, and yet Tom Udall
and he's retiring undefeated.
Undefeated. Right. Tom Udall is running away with this election against Steve Pierce, a very conservative
split party, wrong state,
Heather
wrong
Wilson,
year, wrong side of the issue.
Right.
So we go on.
So that's
to the,
two.
That's Udall of New Mexico. How about
three.
Udall of Colorado?
Well, that's three if you include. So we have Virginia, we have Alaska, we have New Mexico.
All
now
right.
We have Colorado.
Udall of
a
Colorado.
A closer race, but a same five-letter word. Udall wins. Well, that bolder liberal against that Colorado
Very
Springs conservative.
That's right.
But,
former member of Congress.
But Mark Udall is doing things right. He's getting all the endorsements. He has tons of money. Schaefer is kind of...
But Schaefer's ads have been very tough, and they have pegged him as a tax raiser from the very beginning.
Udall.
From the very beginning, Mark Udall.
Yeah.
And, you know, that dovetails now with the late McCain emphasis on taxes and redistribution of wealth and so on. And who knows? Maybe you could get an outlier there. You could get a cross-cut result where Colorado goes for Obama but does not elect the presumed Democratic favorite.
I say Udall wins Colorado.
All right. Just throwing out a chance here. Just a little chance.
New Hampshire.
John Sununu not running such a bad race against Gene
Shaheen. He's a good candidate, and
he's
a smart guy.
He is not responsible for the situation he's in, and people may be beginning to think that. New Hampshire's a classic anti-tax state. It's also a state that still likes John McCain better than most states in the North, certainly better than any other state in New England.
That's correct.
And so there's still a chance there for John
Sununu.
Not a slam dunk.
A UNH poll just came out this week that said that Sununu was doing better. He's trailed from the beginning.
Okay, but you don't really believe he's going to make it over the top.
You think he's
going down to the former governor,
Gene
Shaheen.
That's a tough one.
So, all right, you've got both Colorado and New Hampshire joining those other easier calls in the Democratic
and
column.
The
that's five.
And this is a rematch. The last time a rematch was overturned in a Senate, do you know the answer to this?
This was also in New Hampshire. Was it not?
Well, you're thinking of John Durkin and Louis Wyman.
Yes, I think of them daily.
Yes, as the mayor of Chicago. But there's something even more recent, a Senate rematch that has gone the other way.
Oh, Ohio.
Excellent.
John Glenn and Howard
Wetzenbauer. Howard Wetzenpants.
Howard the plumber. But it was in Ohio.
Howard Wetzenbauer and Robert Taft Jr.
That is correct. Robert
76.
Taft Jr. in 1976. There was a back and forth between John Glenn and Howard Wetzenbauer as to nominations where one won and then the other one won, both being Democrats. But you're right, between Taft and Metzenbaum, that was a reversal, and that makes your column. You can just go ahead and write the junkie right now. Just type it right up.
Yeah, it was in last week's column.
Uh-huh.
Two that are maybe too close to call, Minnesota.
That would be Norm Coleman, the incumbent Republican.
And Al Franken.
Al Franken, the insane Democrat. No, there is every reason to think that this race will go absolutely down to the final minutes because there's a third-party candidate in there. I think Norm Coleman would be okay if he were just on his own against Al Franken because Franken's appeal is primarily to Democrats and liberals. How many times have people seen Al Franken do outrageous things on television and think, well, that's fine, he's a TV comic. Not a United States senator.
Not in Minnesota.
Well, all right.
I mean, we have value.
The third-party candidate is Dean Barkley. And how did he get to serve a couple of months in the United States Senate a few years back?
But
and
we
I
have,
know you know.
As we all know, when Paul Wellstone perished in a plane crash.
Dean Barkley.
Yes. He replaced the late Paul Wellstone and Governor Jesse Ventura appointed him.
Of the Boa Party.
The Boa Party, yes. He was constricted from running again, though.
Absolutely. So he couldn't. So that's how we got Norm Coleman.
Okay, so I say Coleman wins.
I think Coleman wins.
You do?
I do, because I think in the end people stop and say, Al Franken, really? Come on.
Another senator who looks like is the end of her career is Elizabeth Dole.
Elizabeth Dole.
Who'd have thought
Liddy, we hardly knew you after only one term. But you know what? She never really moved into the Senate. I don't think she never really showed much affection for it. She did not campaign particularly effectively. She did not maintain an address in North Carolina, just used her mother's address
in
Salisbury. And, you know, she didn't really show a great deal of urgency in running for her own re-election.
Kay Hagan was, like, I think, the Democrats' fifth choice.
I think number five.
They turned Mike Easley, the retiring governor, said no. A lot of members of Congress said no.
Which amazes me. I mean, the guy could have walked into the United States Senate and had no idea.
Unlike Max.
This is also the guy who endorsed Hillary Clinton about 3 days before the primary, where she lost by 20 points. Yeah. Maybe Mike wouldn't have walked into the Senate.
There are two very interesting commercials coming out of that race. One put out on
couple of old,
the old
couple
geezers.
Of geezers like that podcast.
The two old geezers for Kay Hagan criticizing Elizabeth Dole.
And Liddy Dole is 92.
She's 93, I thought.
I'm telling you, Liddy Dole is 93.
93?
Yep. She ranks 93rd in effectiveness.
And there's also an Elizabeth Dole ad that came out this week about the fact that Kay Hagan has been endorsed by godless Democrats, and that is very bizarre.
Godless Americans and Kay Hagan. She hid from cameras, took godless money. What did Hagan promise in return?
There is no God.
Given the fact that Elizabeth Dole has been in politics for 40 years, you'd think that she would know how some things sound. To me, this sounds very bizarre, especially a week to go before the election.
It sounds desperate. It just sounds as though she knows she's losing and she wants to make one more big gesture to show she cares. It's a backfiring type of a gesture.
Three more Senate races I want to talk about. The special in Mississippi, the Georgia with Saxby Chambliss, and Kentucky.
All-state Republican.
I agree. I agree.
All-state Republican because Mississippi, even in a huge year for Democrats, will probably stick with a Republican incumbent appointed by their still popular Republican governor, Haley Barbour.
Roger Wicker's the candidate.
But Jim Martin is just almost anonymous. Yeah. He's not even a current state legislator.
But
he's
it may
a
not matter. We saw in 1994 there were Republicans who had no business winning. In 2006, Democrats who had no business winning except for their party label.
In 1980, there were Republicans in the South who won seats where no Republican had won since Reconstruction.
And they were gone in 2 years.
And they were gone in 2 years or 6 years or whenever their next term was up.
Right.
So this could be that kind of election, and if it sweeps Saxby Chambliss out, that would be, in some sense, rough justice for what happened in 2002 when he defeated Max Cullen. All right, we don't have much time to talk about the House, but we agree the Democrats are going to add a lot more seats. It used to be 10 or 15, now it's 15, 20 or more. I'm going to pick a number. I'm going to pick 256 Democrats in the new Congress, and the reason I pick that number is because it's approximately where we expect them to be, and that would be exactly the number that they had when the Newt Gingrich revolution swept them out of the majority in 1994.
That would be a net plus of 20 seats. And right now, I think that's likely. I think actually that number could increase by Tuesday. Something to notice, Tim Mahoney, the Democrat in Florida, is gone. I think Nick Lamson in Texas, who has Tom DeLay's seat, could lose. Chris Chase may go down to Connecticut. For the first
happening.
Time in history, there'll be
no
Republican in New
from
England.
New England. Yeah. Not a single one. 22 districts, not one Republican.
And there are two Republican seats in Wyoming and Idaho that are in trouble. Bill Sally in Idaho, the open Barbara Cuban seat in Wyoming.
He'll survive.
But even still, the Democrat Gary Traynor is coming back. If the Democrats win in Wyoming, which I still think they don't, but if they do...
That is Dick Cheney's old seat.
Right, and that number could be far closer to 40 than it is to 20.
Ken, just one more thing. If the Democrats do win, will they spread the wealth? Will they redistribute income in America?
To NPR and to Ken Rudin and Ron Elving. Speaking of which...
That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR News.
When we will have a president-elect.
Maybe.
Perhaps, perhaps, perhaps. If you can't make your mind up, we'll...